It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast. Here we go. With Malia Jacobson as your host.
Hello, and welcome to Sleep Well, Stay Well. I'm your host, sleep and health journalist, Malia Jacobson. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to have you here with me today. Happy New Year to you. I hope your 2021 has been great so far. We are less than a week in, but I think it's been pretty okay so far, at least from where I'm sitting, and I hope the same goes for you. You know, as many of us are thinking about ways to be healthier in the new year or to maintain our health, I think that the next guest that I have lined up is just one who is the perfect person to talk to. I'm really pleased to welcome an icon and thought leader in health and business, Paul Schulich. Paul co-founded New Chapter Supplements, which he grew into one of the most influential brands in the industry before selling to Procter & Gamble in 2012. His new company is For the Biome and his cutting-edge work to advance the understanding of both the microbiome and the macrobiome is changing the paradigm for both skincare and immune health. He has so much to share, and I think you'll really enjoy this discussion. So let's get to it. Paul, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for being here. I'm excited to talk to you.
Thank you for having me, Malia.
Thank you. So you are a master herbalist, and you train others in the discipline as well. I've been enjoying reading about your background. It's so interesting. What's the path to becoming a master herbalist? I'm curious, what's involved and how long does it take?
There are different programs. When I enrolled at the School of Natural Healing in Park City, Utah, that was 38 years ago in 1982. It was under the direction of Dr. John Christopher, who was a renowned naturopath, as well as a very familiar with the field of herbal medicine. And it was basically a one-year program with a residence component to it. So you would do field work, but I would say, Malia, the real work occurs when you're actually working with people and actually creating products.
Wonderful, thank you. And speaking of that, you co-founded New Chapter Supplements, a very well-known brand that many people would be familiar with. It was purchased by Procter & Gamble in 2012. Can you talk about what you have been doing since then?
I worked, starting when Procter & Gamble purchased New Chapter in 2012, I worked with Procter & Gamble for 6 years till 2018, and then felt like I could advance our mission best by going off on my own again. So it was like a trip back in time and one that I'm enjoying very much, my independence and my need to create the kind of products that I want to create.
And where did that take you? Where did that journey lead you in terms of the types of products that you were more interested in?
So started in 2018, I created a company called For the Biome. Biome is B-I-O-M-E, as in the microbiome, but this is the macrobiome for the larger community. And essentially, I started creating products that were from the outside in, working on a topical line of products using the technologies that I was very familiar with, the fermentation and supercritical extraction. Fermentation to enhance the activity of some of my favorite herbs, and supercritical extraction to conserve and to deliver the most vital aspects of some of the more oily rich plants like chamomile or ginger or turmeric, and bringing those to the public.
So you're talking about topical applications, so skincare essentially, rather than supplements and things that people are ingesting?
Correct. And what's intriguing about the Malia is that people don't realize that so much of what they're putting on their skin is actually they are ingesting it. So there is a very fine line there in that in that skin barrier between what goes into the bloodstream and what doesn't go into the bloodstream. So it was a really wonderful exercise for me to create a series of products that would deliver these herbal benefits to the skin.
Yeah, it is really interesting to learn about how much nutrients can be absorbed through the skin. It's been fascinating for me to learn just a little bit about that too. So you mentioned it was like going back in time to start this new venture for the biome. But of course, now you have the wisdom and experience of someone who's grown your company from a very small homegrown company started by you and Barb. Is it Barb or Barbie?
Barbie for, yeah. It's, but she would go by either name.
And so the two of you grew this company together, and now you're going off on a new venture. Can you kind of compare and contrast the two experiences? I mean, are there takeaways that you are taking into your new venture from the new chapter part of your story?
That's a great question. I would say the most important learning for me is the oft quoted statement that those who know realize how much they don't know. And I think in my case, I realized how much I didn't know and how much I needed to rely upon other people. There were 300 plus other people at the peak of New Chapter when we built it to its element, its highest point. And you don't build a company without those people. And so I think probably the most important lesson I've learned is to appreciate the people you work with even more, and also to appreciate how I just have the kind of entrepreneurial wiring to build a company. I always rely upon many, many people who are able to do many things that I can't. And so that's been a really instrumental piece of our success. And I think those lessons, I realized how many, whatever mistakes, if I could call them that, in building New Chapter, it's from learning from those mistakes that I think I'll be making fewer mistakes in this new enterprise.
Right. Can you give an example of something that you think you're going to do differently? I'm just curious. I went to business school. I have a background, so it's so interesting to me.
Sure.
It's kind of case study.
Yeah, yeah. I think when I started with New Chapter, I think I really underestimated how important it is to build consensus with your team. And I was very, still have the quality of being headstrong, but I'm much more respectful of you must enroll the whole team. I think it being a business school graduate, you understand probably the most important thing for a business to succeed is timing. And so it's a combination of timing and team. And I think that those two factors on the team, I could have been probably more cognizant that all the other members of the team, to whatever degree I could bring them along or learn from them in opposing viewpoints. I don't think I was particularly good at listening to opposing viewpoints. So I think that was my biggest foible. And I think I'm getting better at that. So I'd say that's probably the most, and timing is something that's hard when you're entrepreneurial in nature, because everything you feel like you have to do it yesterday. And I have to watch that. I think as I'm rounding the corner to getting to be 70 years old, I am appreciating, I spend a lot of time in meditation and practices each day, and that's helping me be a little bit more patient. I don't think I was particularly, no, I wasn't particularly patient in the early years. And I could think of a number of examples where that didn't serve me well.
Right, thank you. I can certainly relate to that. I'm also curious about how your work at New Chapter kind of influenced your own personal health and your own practices as you were learning how to formulate and market supplements and herbs. Did that change the way that you were approaching your own health and the supplements and herbs that you were taking personally?
It's a great question. And it's funny, I was just talking to Barbie about this on our morning walk. There's a real challenge, at least from my perspective, to being in this field, in that you're constantly bombarded with all these different philosophies of living and of eating and of supplementation. And it's kind of enough to drive you a little bit crazy, in all candor. And it's a little bit like, it reminds me of, I had heard that there was a study years ago of oncologists in the UK, and a high percentage of them ended up being depressed, clinically depressed. It's hard for your work not to take control of your life. So when I read journals every single day, and in those journal articles, I see, oh, this herb can, or this mushroom, or this algae, or this microbe can protect your mitochondria, or can protect your eyesight, or on and on and on and on, you end up with a phenomena that's, I think it's been, there's probably a name for it, I don't remember it, but it's like the medical students who study diseases, and then they start manifest, they think they have the disease. So I think that's been a downside of the, if I could call it that, in, just in terms of my, when I sit down to a meal, it's unlike anybody else sitting down to a meal, because it's like my mind dissects everything that I eat, and I can drive both myself and people around me a little bit crazy. On the upside of that is, if you look at reviews of products that I've created over the decades, you see a lot of people have been helped. Some of which they believe their lives were saved. So I think that's a small price to pay in terms of your own personal perspectives. I've also, I think for my age, I'm probably, at least at this juncture, in a healthier position than many people my age. I don't take any prescription drugs. And I'm relatively healthy. So yeah, I should knock on some wood, but it's, especially in this era that we're living in. But I think those are some of the upsides and downsides of being in the trade.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. I'm curious about what fueled your interest in moving to work more with the biome, and specifically the macro biome. I know probiotics and the microbiome and everything is topical now, and people have heard the words even if they don't really fully understand what those things are. But it's often focused more on ingestibles and supplements, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. What kind of, why did you want to sort of move in the direction of the macrobiome and more topical applications?
Sure. Well, about 30 years ago, I wrote a book with a couple of my colleagues called The Life Bridge. And in that book, I expressed my fascination and thrill over the unseen world of the microbiome. And it's a little bit like dark matter in the universe. It's, we know so little about it relatively, and yet there are many, 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 many times more genetic expressions that we walk around with that are not human in root. And even the human root is interspersed with the viral DNA and mitochondrial interconnectedness. So everything is kind of flows in and out of everything else. And it's very much a human notion that we are these separate beings walking around. We're absolutely in a soup of microbial experience. And then for me, it's interesting, there's many, many answers to why I would go for the macrobiome. But at this phase in my life, I realize one of the things my son Jeremy is a climate activist, and he would regularly inform me, educate me, chastise me, and sometimes for making more products in an era when the world itself is somewhat on fire. And so I said to Jeremy, I said, you know, I'm interested in making products because it's my craft and because I think I can help people with it. But only, again, should they be what I used to call it, a new chapter. And so they'd have to really make a difference in people's lives and be different than everything else. But ultimately, to me, the mission was to give back, was to, I wanted a sustainable business. But I like with New Chapter, where I worked for the first few years and didn't make any money, the same has happened here. And instead, just like then, but even more so now, I've invested even more money in building this. But for me, it's all a giving back. And so for the biome, I believe that we can only be as happy ultimately as our communities. So whether it's our micro community or our macro community.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, that's important. And how has this year's events impacted your work in this space?
Well, and when I was working, when I left New Chapter in 2018, as I said, I was starting to create a line of products to help nourish the skin. Then in February, as I was finishing up on the innovations and formulations, the pandemic hit. And it was like a obvious experience for me because it was like, oh, now I know what I'm supposed to do because I have these, what I call the 10 formulation principles. And in there, the first two are to bring light and to make a contribution. And so I really felt like I could bring light and make a contribution with some of the discoveries I was making around, because I was looking for myself and my family, as I always did. I was looking for how can I support the immune system and make the system what I refer to now as a wiser immune system. I wasn't looking to boost or to stimulate or even to activate the immune system. What I wanted to do was make it smarter, make it wiser. And so the pandemic moved me to work on that front.
Well, thank you. That kind of takes me to my next question. What did you find about making your immune system wiser or smarter during this time? It's something that is the focus of this podcast, as well as something that's on everyone's minds this year.
Yes. So the idea of wisdom, a smarter, wiser immune system, is really what the goal is. And the kingdoms of nature, whether it's algae or mushrooms or microbial or herbal, or even the animal kingdom with products like honey, Manuka honey, you can you can reinforce and build a system so that it can respond. Just like one of my colleagues at the University of Illinois way back, Dr. Norman Farnsworth, said that for every disease that afflicts mankind, there's a remedy that nature offers. And I've always kind of adhered to that. So not to say that a vaccine couldn't be a useful quote-unquote remedy, but what I learned as I was doing my studies is that I think many people are now familiar that there are pro-inflammatory cytokines and there are anti-inflammatory cytokines. And so the immune system needs to be able to pull out the cytokines that it needs at the time that it wants to. And when I started studying and looking for herbs, for example, or mushrooms, I was looking for items that would either had not been introduced into the domestic marketplace or would have the ability to both modulate both pro and anti-inflammatory cytokines. Because so many people, as we both know now, as so many of us know, the problem is that many of us who are dying from COVID-19 are dying from friendly fire. It's almost like the immune system is not that wise, and it just starts shooting out these pro-inflammatory compounds. And so in creating a product and then scientifically validating it, I had to show that I could move the needle on the anti-inflammatory cytokines so your system could hear better and in some ways see better. And the monocytes that are those cells that are at the center of this storm, they're the ones that have to look and see and determine for what's referred to as immune surveillance. They need to go out and check out what's going on out there, and they need not to be exhausted. If the natural killer cells are exhausted, then the body itself has a harder time countering a viral or a bacterial infection. And so the three areas that I worked on was on directly on immune cells, the monocytes and the natural killer cells. And then I worked on, and this is something very familiar for you, is stress, worked on using 7 different flowers that could enhance or improve our response to stress. And then lastly, utilize the microbial kingdom and the herbal kingdom and the mushroom kingdom to put together a fermentation, what's referred to in our literature as postbiotics, put together postbiotics from nutrient-dense herbs and mushrooms, utilizing the most researched strains of microbial life, and that then generate incredibly powerful healing compounds to the body. And then combining that with what I would call an elite probiotic strain, a plantarum strain called DR7. And I've really been impressed by this one strain. And my first product for New Chapter was in 1982, and it was a probiotic product and a prebiotic product. So I've been into this for a long time. But when I discovered DR7, it was intriguing to me that it was working on the dopaminergic, serotonergic, central nervous system. It was doing a crosstalk in the gut to the gut-brain axis. There was also research demonstrating that it was working on the gut-lung axis and that it was helping the body respond to gut issues, the gut-lung axis. And then lastly, it was supporting gut health. And if that wasn't enough, it was also preventing the shortening of telomeres. So to me, that was a perfect hurdles to go through to introduce in this third product, a combination of fermentation postbiotics, along with what I consider to be one of the most researched and intriguing and important probiotic strains called DR7.
Right. And so as someone who has such a long history with manufacturing and marketing probiotic supplements, can you talk about things that most consumers probably don't know about the probiotic supplements that they may be taking and picking up at various drugstores and pulling off the shelves?
Yes.
I know that there are many different kinds of probiotics, that people might not be aware of, like what you're talking about.
So as you know, the answer to that question could be very involved, but essentially what many consumers don't realize is that many of the probiotics that are commonly sold in the marketplace are not properly identified. Something like 30 or 40% at least of the strains have not been properly identified through DNA sequencing. The other thing is that we don't know. People think that the more strains you have or the more potency you have, the better. It doesn't work really like that. They are like a seed, and they in many ways attract like-minded seeds. And just like viral infections often have a concomitant bacterial component, if you bring in the right strains of microbial life, they tend to attract like attracts like. So you get good strains. And interestingly, on one of the studies that I reviewed on DR7, the potency at twice the amount wasn't better in terms of its results. It was slightly less in terms of its gut health benefits. So more is not better. And I think that we need to make sure that we get the right microbes.
Right. So,
and I should say, what's really important, which often goes unstated, is that they must find home in your digestive system, because once they find home, then they start giving you gifts. And those gifts are, to me, the most important part of taking a probiotic, which is the postbiotic. And that's why you eat a diet that's rich in prebiotics. And that's how you can start to improve your digestive health.
Right. So diet rich in prebiotics, that those feed the probiotics, is that right? And what types of foods are those?
It's basically all the things that our society and our doctors have been trying to tell us to eat, your fruits and vegetables. In the fruits and vegetables are the fibers that the bacteria love to digest and to grow with. It's the refined foods, the highly manufactured foods that tend to not attract the healthier forms of the microbial life.
Right. And along with, so you mentioned that the potency may not necessarily indicate quality. So for example, making sure that you're taking, for example, 50 billion a probiotic with 50 billion live organisms, that isn't as important as making sure that you are taking a high quality product with the right strains.
Yes, that's right. And one of the most researched strains in the world, if not the most, I think there's been 1,000 studies on Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG. And that's one of the strains that we use to create postbiotics. I believe it's only a few, 1 or 2 billion that's delivered in that particular product. I think it's not 50 billion, that I know, and, or 100 billion. And so it's not necessarily better.
Well, I've always wondered how supplement manufacturers make sure that those organisms are actually live and viable when they get to a pill form, and then that must then make it through your digestive system with all the acids and different things going on. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, they've got to do clinical studies on that. And the companies that market the strains have to go to their supplier and make sure that that strain was clinically studied to adhere and to produce what it was and to have the benefits that it was. And in that is, what is the shelf life? What is the And how does the efficacy get measured? And again, there's a few products that are out in the market that fill those requirements, but a lot don't.
And what are the products that are out in the market that do fill those requirements?
I for example, do like, as I said, the Rhamnosus GG Culturelle is a great product. That is probably the most researched of all products. I also really like Bifidobacteria Breve and this product called BB536. I like that product a lot. There's a lot of science to support it. And so those are some of the strains that I really have appreciated.
Thank you.
Boulardii is another strain, now I come to think of it. Saccharomyces boulardii, that's a yeast. And it's important just not to rely upon the bacterial kingdom, but to rely as well on the yeast kingdom. So I also utilize Saccharomyces cerevisiae, the variety called Boulardii.
All right, thank you. So can you talk about the world of sleep? Is there anything that you're working on right now or that you have used in the past that has helped with sleep?
I think the most important thing for me has been my attitude. And as I've aged, I was a person in my 30s, 40s, and 50s that put my head on the pillow and then I was asleep. It was like instantaneous. As I got into my 60s, specifically in late 50s, I noticed that my relationship with sleep changed. And it wasn't the same experience. And so for me, one of the things I really wanted to do was to frame sleep as a period of rest rather than a period where I needed to be unconscious for 8 straight hours. So that what I experienced was the idea of sleep, of resting with meditation and breath exercises and taking that wonderful period of time. For me, it starts at 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night and usually ends around 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning. I take that time to do my meditations, my pranayama. And I had to work on my attitude a little bit because I thought I should sleep exactly the same as I did when I was in my 40s and 50s. And that didn't happen because my hormones were changing. So that was the most important thing for me.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, I love that approach. And some of my other guests have talked about that as well, that sometimes the more we try to force sleep, that it doesn't happen. And that makes everything worse, especially when people are struggling with insomnia. So yep, designating a time and thinking of it more as just a time for rest rather than a time.
Correct.
You have to be unconscious. And so I think one of my other guests said, sleep is a perception. You don't really know, you know, a lot of times people get woken up and they'll say, well, I wasn't even asleep. You know, we don't always even know when we're asleep.
So it is
a perception. And so kind of reframing the way that we think about that, especially as we move through different life stages, is so important. Is there anything?
I've noticed. Yes. Oh. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
Oh, no. Finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say that I've often noticed a kind of a hypnagogic state, and that is, just when I thought I was wide awake, I was actually in somewhat of a dreamy state. And then also, I have come to really appreciate the value of dreams and the lessons that can be embedded in a dream. And so I became really intrigued by dream science and learning about what my unconscious was holding and trying to tell me.
Right. Yeah. I think that's so fascinating. It's also so interesting that when we are in a sleep deprived state or in different stages of life, we may dream less. So when you're in a sleep deprived state and your body goes into recovery sleep. So for example, for new parents, for example, they might just not dream or dream much less because your body is spending less time in the stage of sleep where dreams occur. So you kind of go in and out of phases in your life where you are. I had a long phase in my life where I just didn't, when my you know, I'm kind of coming out of it now, but where having kids and in that sleep deprived state, I just didn't dream. I feel like I didn't dream for like 10 years.
Yes.
Constantly in the make it, you know, in the recovery stage, where you just are sleeping so deeply that you are not in that lighter stage of sleep where dreams happen. And then all of a sudden kind of bounced out of that and realized that I was starting to actually have dreams again. It was very, very interesting. Yeah. To kind of chart that over the course of your life.
Really, really valuable lessons to be learned in that. And yeah, I think the dream state is one that maybe young parents, if I go back, I had two children. I can relate that you don't really, you're just so focused on raising your children. You almost don't think enough time that can occur with dreaming. So I hear that.
Yes. And I'm also curious on the supplement side, you know, working so deeply in manufacturing and marketing supplements, were there supplements that you found either at New Chapter or in your new work with For the Biome that help people either with sleep specifically or just more with relaxation and stress?
Oh, that's a great question. I think for me, the most important thing is to make sure you have the energy to do your exercise each day. And so the supplements that would buoy one's exercise routines would be, whether they be anti-inflammatory supplements like ginger and turmeric, or whether it would be the practice of one of my favorite herbs has always been chamomile. And it doesn't put me to sleep, but what it does is it just creates a more relaxed state. And that in that state, I found that the dose of the chamomile is usually around 5 grams. And that's what the science actually supports, that the 5 gram dose is what, and I usually will do that at like a 5 or 5:30 and at night. And so it creates a, whatever stress or tension I've carried from my day, the chamomile has a way of easing that.
Right. Thank you. Is there anything else that you would like to share about what you are working on now or what's around the corner for you?
I think what we're doing now, I just would invite people to go visit our website and they could see there's a huge amount of work, a small team has put together, but it's a very agile and very effective team. Check out our work for the biome on both the topicals and the ingestibles. And around the corner, I'd say the immune system continues to attract me because it's constantly, I'm learning more each day and I'm learning more about the microbiome each day. So, and particularly in response to vaccinations, for example. So I'm learning about vaccinations and understanding more about what might be done to make either vaccinations work better or make them safer.
Right. Yes, it's so exciting to be working in an emerging area like that. And I did want to ask as we wrap up, people are making New Year's resolutions. And I think particularly this year, people are focused on health and well-being and immune health. What are some things that people can do or think about as they're making resolutions for the new year?
I think the most important thing is just to be open and to consider your biome, consider everybody else, not just yourself. And I think in our culture, we have been a little bit more self-focused. And so I think we all need to kind of, including myself, say to ourselves, what can I do that can be the best to benefit the larger, the whole? And that dates back one of my earliest favorite philosophers, Marcus Aurelius, that what you do should always be for the whole, or what we call for the biome. So I think that's the most important resolution that we need to make.
Thank you. Yeah, I love that, thinking about the biome in terms of not just the community of bacteria that live inside all of us, but our connectedness and our community in the world and in the space that we live
in. That's it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here today, and Happy New Year to you, Paul.
And thank you so much. It was really wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
All right.
It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast, now you know. Thanks for checking out the show.